Greetings, and welcome to Opcast, the op-ed podcast. I'm David Shipley, deputy editorial page editor and op-ed page editor at the New York Times, and every week we'll have a conversation with someone who has made a recent appearance on the op-ed page. This week, I'm joined by Anita Hill, a law professor at Brandeis. Ms. Hill, welcome.
Thank you.
Justice Clarence Thomas has a book out. It's a memoir called My Grandfather's Son, and in it he discusses your testimony about him in his Supreme Court nomination hearings in 1991. To remind listeners, your testimony concerned your experience working for Mr. Thomas at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, an experience where you contend he behaved inappropriately and was guilty of sexual harassment. Now, in response to your testimony, charges were leveled against you by those in support of the Thomas nomination, charges that Justice Thomas repeats in his book and which you address in your op-ed piece. And I was thinking we could just go through them one by one. Would that be okay?
Oh, sure.
So Justice Thomas says that you were a quote, combative left-winger, when he hired you to work in the Reagan administration. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that's one of the more interesting conceptualizations that he has of me. I don't think that many combative left-wingers would have survived at all in the Reagan administration. I think the overall problem that Thomas has in his mischaracterization of me is that it is completely conflicted with itself. I mean, internally, there's so many inconsistencies within his discrimination that his description of me makes absolutely no sense on its face.
Well, let's take one of those inconsistencies that you talk about. One is his contention that you were a mediocre employee who had a government job because it had, quote, been given to you. Maybe you could respond to that one first.
Well, he seems to suggest that I was unqualified to have a government position at the time. I had just graduated from Yale Law School, which was with Thomas's alma mater as well. He graduated sometime before I did. But it was it is one of the finest law schools in the country, and he recognizes that in his book. Nevertheless, he describes me or suggest that I was unqualified to have the job that he hired me for, except for the fact that he was kind enough to give it to me. I had been in a law firm in Washington, D.C. before I went to work for him. I had worked in Los Angeles in one of the top law firms in that city. Prior to the time I was in Washington, D.C., I'd worked at the Los Angeles firm as a summer associate. So I was qualified to work as a lawyer in the private sector as well as the public.
And another contradiction you point out, in fact, you were not just hired by Mr. Thomas once, but twice, correct?
That's absolutely correct. He hired me at the Department of Education as an attorney advisor, and then rehired me at the EEOC. At the time, he didn't have to rehire me if he thought I was mediocre or not qualified. He didn't have to rehire me, but he chose to do so. And so it's really ironic that now he's saying that I was not a good employee.
Now, on 60 Minutes, Justice Thomas spoke about your religious convictions, saying that you were not the, quote, religious conservative person, end quote, you'd been portrayed as. How would you answer that?
Well, this is another way that he is trying to reinvent me. The religious comment makes no sense, in effect, because when I left Justice Thomas's employ, I went to work at Oral Roberts University, which is an evangelical Christian university in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He, in fact, wrote me a letter of recommendation for that university and never once questioned or suggested to me or to them that I wasn't Christian enough to be working there. I did work there for 3 years before the law school at that university was sold to another Christian university. And I was asked to consider work at the second Christian university. So neither he nor the people at Oral Roberts raised any questions about my religious beliefs before now. In fact, before this book came out.
In the article, you also go on to say that you've obviously spent a lot of time around sexual harassment and discrimination law. Do you see similarities between your experience and the experience of other people who have made harassment or discrimination charges in their workplaces?
You know, this is really typical. The kinds of tactics and methods that Justice Thomas is using is so typical. You know, to recast or reinvent or mischaracterize the individual raising the charge, to denigrate their work contribution, it's very typical of how people who are charged with workplace misconduct respond. It's particularly troublesome, though, when it's done by a Supreme Court justice. I think it sends the wrong message. He is writing this in an effort to vindicate himself personally, but in doing so, he's sending the message that this is how you respond to a complaint. Instead of dealing on facts, you deal on mischaracterization and smear and innuendo. Instead of looking at all of the evidence or at least presenting your evidence, he suggests that I was some part of some left-wing fringe. I was a left-winger and put up to my testimony by political entities, but he can show no connection between me and any political group that was out to stop his nomination. And in fact, other people have written about the nomination. Independent journalists and writers have written about it. And none of them have found these connections that he suggests. So he doesn't present evidence to suggest that his version of what happened in the workplace in the 1980s is, in fact, the real version.
So why do you think he's doing this?
I think perhaps this is his last effort to represent himself as someone who is worthy of the position that he is in. I'm not sure why he feels the need to do that at this point. That choice has already been made. It was made by the Senate in 1991, and he is on the court, and it is a lifetime appointment. So I don't know why he feels the need to vindicate himself, but I think that's what he is trying to do. But he does it in a way that is beneath the court, and it is really beneath anyone who would be a competent arbiter of the truth, because he doesn't present any facts to support what he says. And in fact, he can't present any facts to support what he says, because what he says about me is not true.
And finally, I mean, as you just mentioned, as you say in the piece, the question of whether Clarence Thomas belongs on the court was really settled 16 years ago by the Senate. What hasn't been settled, though, is how we respond to charges of sexual harassment or discrimination in the workplace. Do you feel we've made progress since 1991?
We have made progress, but progress is always tenuous. And sometimes people use bad examples, especially if they come from the top, like the Supreme Court. They will use bad examples as reasons to turn back on that progress and veer down another path. And my hope is that this will not be the case with Mr. Thomas. And in particular, what I'm afraid of is that individuals seeing his reaction and his approach to resolving this issue will say, well, if that could happen, for Supreme Court justice to do that, that could happen in my workplace. My boss could do that, or my supervisor could do that, or colleague could do that if I complain about them. So I'm just not going to complain. I don't want to go through that. I hope that that is not the message that we take away from this, okay? I hope by speaking out, the message that we take away is that even if very powerful people try to destroy you, it is worth your dignity to pursue your rights.
Thank you. Anita Hill is a professor of social policy, law, and women's studies at Brandeis. Ms. Hill, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. On behalf of all of us ink and pixel-stained wretches in the editorial department of the New York Times, this is David Shipley. Thanks for listening.